The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Sonia Yusech-Kuhn of the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to another edition of Community Connections. Every month we will introduce you to people in the community who are making a difference. My guest today is Kristen Larson, an award-winning teacher. Welcome, Kristen. I am delighted that you can join us and share your stories about school and students. Here are some wonderful things to know about Kristen. Kristen Larson grew up in Grand Rapids, Michigan. She loved school and learning all kinds of new things, so it made sense to pursue a career that would allow her to keep learning every day. Kristen believes that there aren't many other environments with band, theater, sports, visual arts, health, science, history, math, and literature all happening at the same time in the same building. School is a vibrant place that shows the fullness of life and often the hard stuff, too. Kristen graduated from the University of Michigan in 2006 with a Bachelor of Education and Teacher Licensure in grades 6 through 12 in mathematics and history. There weren't many jobs in Michigan at that time, but there were lots of opportunities in the South. Her family had visited North Carolina in the spring of her 11th grade year, and she loved the area. When she met a representative from Wake County Public Schools in North Carolina at a job fair, she made sure to hand over her resume. Kristen flew down to interview at three high schools in August of 2006, and she chose to accept a position teaching ninth grade world history at Sanderson High School in Raleigh. And she's been in Raleigh, North Carolina ever since. She met her husband, Jeff, in 2008. They were married 2 years later. She has two stepchildren, Jace, Shaylee, and Kristen never had a pet growing up, but Jeff, Jace, and Shaylee always had cats, so they adopted Luna, a fluffy black cat with big yellow eyes. Kristen wasn't expecting to enjoy her so much. Then the family adopted a second cat, a tabby, with a big personality. Teaching has been a very rewarding experience for Kristen, who has learned so much teaching world history, American history, and U.S. history, and a difficult class called Holocaust and Genocide. With two other teachers, she presented ideas about how to teach teenagers about the Holocaust and Genocide. At the North Carolina Center for Special Studies Education Conference, 3 years in a row, she earned National Board Certification in 2010. Kristen was Sanderson High School's Teacher of the Year in 2014 and a finalist for Wake County Public Schools Teacher of the Year. After visiting a charter school, she became interested in their classroom management style and received Awake Education Partnership Teacher Leadership Grant to attend an Uncommon Schools conference to learn their research-based methods and teach them at her school. She served as Social Studies Department Chair for 5 years and was a Student Council Advisor. Kristen served as a member of the Equity Team to ensure equitable access to education for all students. After 13 years as a high school teacher, she was getting burned out and needed a change. She considered leaving the field of education, but found she loved teaching way too much to leave. There are so many things about the job that are fun, rewarding, and fulfilling. She chose to stay in education and change to a different subject, 7th grade science and social studies at Pine Hollow Middle School. Making the switch renewed her energy. Most recently, Kristen was named Teacher of the Week for our local television station, WRAL. And that was in 2014, and just recently in March 2022 again. Kristen enjoys reading, playing the cello, singing, cooking, walking, exercising, traveling, and recently she began cardio boxing classes. Playing the cello since seventh grade as a hobby has led her to become a member of the Raleigh Community Orchestra. She is also a backup singer in a Rolling Stones cover band called Beggar's Banquet. Her idea of a perfect day would include time to disappear into a good novel and a nice long walk on the Raleigh Greenway. Welcome, Kristen.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Congratulations on your many awards. Which one meant the most to you?
Funny enough, this might not be the one people would think is most important, but when I got an email that someone had nominated me recently for the WRAL Teacher of the Week Award, it was very special to me, especially because it had been a long journey through COVID, and it was a nice surprise. It was an anonymous nomination, and the parent, I'm assuming it's a parent, who wrote the nomination said that I made sure special education students had assignments that were accessible for them and they could do their work alongside their classmates without feeling separate. The work that goes into those kinds of assignments is a lot behind the scenes, and it was nice that someone noticed and appreciated all the work that I had done and that it really mattered, and made this surprise award very important to me and energizing going forward into the school year.
That's great. Special needs kids need special teachers. So yeah. Congratulations on being one of them.
Thank you.
The field of education seems to have chosen you based on your love of learning. So tell me how it evolved.
I think that in the house I grew up in, reading was very important and school was very important. My parents read the paper every day. They read to my siblings and I, and my mother was always involved in the school. My father came to meetings all of the time. So reading and school were two of the most important things we could do. It was the culture of my family to learn more and more and talk to each other about what we had learned. I love that. And then when I went to school, like you said earlier, I thrived in that environment. So I never left.
Okay. So there are some lucky kids who had you for a teacher. That's great.
Yeah.
So how did you come to select world history as the subject you taught at Sanderson High School?
A funny story, actually. When I came to North Carolina and interviewed at three schools, two offered me math positions with my dual certification, and one offered me a social studies position. That was Sanderson High School. And they actually said in the interview, "You only have experience with American history, but this position is for world history. Could you do that?" And I really liked the people that interviewed me at Sanderson and the atmosphere in the building. So I said, of course I can teach world history. And I had to pick up a textbook and get reading right away. It has turned out to be a very rewarding subject, even more than I thought, because as a teacher, you do have to repeat your lessons with new students every year. But because there's such a depth of content in world history, there's room for learning more and more and adding that to your lessons every year. It's never boring.
Well, that's true. And are children interested in world history or just, you know, computer games?
I will say they are not really interested in world history unless you make it interesting for them. Right now, this year, I start every class with a history mystery, and I find that presenting information instead of just telling a fact, but presenting it like it's a secret, makes them want to learn something more. And so as much as I can, I'll show a picture and ask them what they think the picture is, or give a quote and ask them who they think said it. I try to make it a mystery, and that seems to help them engage with the material a little more.
Well, that's good. Creativity is very necessary in teaching. And that's a great way to do it. So in reading about you, I was really struck about this, and I'm going to ask you to please talk about your reasons for creating the Holocaust and Genocide class for teenagers. That's a very complex subject, and I'd like to know a few things. First of all, why you did it, and I want to know the reaction of your students.
Yes, the course itself, the shell of the course was already created with Wake County Public Schools. That is an elective they offered. And I started teaching it. It was the first non-core subject I taught as a teacher. And the position became available at my school, and I agreed to teach it, but I felt a heavy responsibility getting involved. It's difficult for teachers to be immersed in that subject of Holocaust and genocide because it covers the worst of humanity, and it's difficult to keep hope. I definitely had low moments after preparing lessons and looking at primary sources, and I was worried my students would feel the same way. But luckily, I had a group of colleagues across the county who were also trying to teach this subject, and we got together as kind of a support group, sharing the best practices to teach about the Holocaust and genocide. And we came up with some ideas that worked and found a balance between showing students the reality of what could happen and also helping them maintain some hope for the future and hope for humanity. We figured out that if you teach Holocaust and genocide really from a framework of genocide prevention, that can help very much. So we designed lessons around Gregory Stanton. There's a man called Gregory Stanton who's a professor and has done a lot of work with genocide. He identified what he calls the 10 stages of genocide, which are identifying the events, ideas, and beliefs that show up in a society years, even decades before a genocide actually occurs. And we made the curriculum, the lessons around identifying those stages of genocide in historical examples, and then looking at how societies today show signs, warning signs, or how people treat each other, have echoes of these stages of division, and giving them the context of how to prevent genocide and how to see how societies heal after genocide made it much more approachable. Students were highly engaged and motivated with this subject because it's something that's not usually taught in normal world history curriculum. And at first, anyway, they had to be upperclassmen. It was a class reserved for 11th and 12th graders, and many that chose it were academically inclined students. And by the end of the class, they would look at current events and look at Gregory Stanton's website called Genocide Watch, which gave examples of how there were societies in the latter stages of genocide and current events. And again, using that lens of genocide prevention, it really helped us approach the curriculum in a way that helped teachers and students get through it and take lessons that they learned and apply them to everyday life and human interaction and their worldview. We also encourage teachers to use a practice we called Shiny Happy Fridays and had students bring in good stories from their lives or their communities or stories from around the world to remind us that hard times can bring out the worst in people, but they can also bring out the best in people. And you know, it's interesting because I think a lot of my students might be alarmed at the trend towards really divided societies today, because some of the early stages of extreme cases in worldview that seems a distinct.
So you taught this to high school children, right?
Yes, that is correct. Yes.
Did you teach it to seventh graders as well?
You know, I have not taught this curriculum, Holocaust and Genocide, to seventh graders. It's not part of that class is not part of the choices that are offered to seventh graders, but I have taken a lot of the lessons we learned about how to teach these alarming subjects and difficult subjects and use those for seventh graders in my lessons on World War II.
Do you discuss with your second graders what is going on in the world today? Because it's the Holocaust with a different name. It's genocide. It's all of those things, those horrors against humanity that are ongoing while we're living here in the United States.
Yes. And current events has always been something that I make sure my students are aware of with videos. And right now, I make sure they have an article of the week, so we're always reading about current events and what's happening in the world and how it connects to what we've learned about history, too. Almost everyone knows the quote, "Those who don't know history are doomed to repeat it." And in fact, I don't even know the true origin of that quote, but it is true. And I hope that students can see the reflections of the past in today's society and figure out how to be an activist and stand up against injustice.
Do any of your students give you the impression that they are worried, concerned, sad about what's happening because it's on the news constantly?
Yes, I, especially with that direct access to images on television and the internet, to current events, there are some students who are very concerned about what's going on. And it's easy, especially as a seventh grader, to feel powerless, as an adult to feel powerless too. But I think the more one understands the situation and looks for more information and can figure out where the root of problems are, it can give you some sense of understanding and control about a situation. So there's no easy answers there, but I do hope that students feel like they can look for answers and explore the causes to find solutions.
Okay. Well explained. Very, very nicely explained. And I'm sure that your soothing manner is confirming to your and reassuring to your students.
Yes.
So it's pretty common knowledge that girls don't often like math. But you like math. So why don't you tell us why you love math and how you engage your students and make math less fearsome for them, especially the girls?
Yes, I actually chose math as my second certification because I knew it would be unexpected and difficult, and I kind of wanted to prove a point. I will say I spent more time on my math than any of my social studies classes in college. And one of the reasons I chose to become certified in math and social studies is because they really do involve different ways of thinking. Like we've been talking about the problems in humanity, and those are complicated problems with multi-causes and religion and politics. But mathematics is clean and orderly, so as much as I like social studies and the studies of people who are complicated and messy, math lets you take a clean sheet of paper and work through something in a process and get to a correct, well, maybe incorrect, but a definite correct or incorrect answer at the end. And emerging from a struggle with a concrete correct answer, it's a very satisfying experience and lets you feel accomplished and intelligent and finished with something.
Yeah.
Where
well,
studies can
I understand that the numbers don't lie. You can fudge statistics, but the numbers don't lie.
Right.
Okay. So now let's talk a little bit about curricula.
Yes.
I have grown children, so I'm not involved in this, but I have friends who are still parenting children in school. And it seems to me that they often talk about the curricula and it changed. So what's the significant change? What's the goal of the new curricula?
I think that the shift, the major shift in all subject areas really has been from memorizing and reproducing and writing about facts to a focus on letting students struggle through material with and learning critical thinking and problem solving along the way. And students are expected to use tools to work their way through a problem solving process and analyze and reflect on what works and what doesn't work along the way. In social studies, that might mean that instead of memorizing types of government like communism and democracy and their definitions, now students are expected to be able to, and this is the exact wording from Civics and Government Standard 1.3 in seventh grade, the standard is, deconstruct changes of various modern governments in terms of the benefits and costs to its citizens. So that's a very high level understanding of government and how, and its impact on citizens. It's very difficult to teach with those kinds of standards instead of just, you know, define this and this and this. I think that is a major challenge for students, parents, and teachers because there's so much gray area and it's many times hard to tell the difference between a student who's struggling and making progress and a student who's just floundering. And I think parents at home who have never had to learn this way find it hard to help their students get to the answer or sometimes maybe misunderstand that this, the point is not for the student even to find an answer, but to relish the struggle and learn own struggle.
I could understand the frustration because right. critical thinking is absolutely necessary to know so that you can get along in this world.
Yes.
And you're right, it's not just memorization, but because it leaves your memory. But if you're, if you've given some critical thought to a situation, you're immersed in it yourself.
Yes.
Well, next time I hear one of my friends, my younger friends, complain, I will explain to them.
Yes.
Thank you for the lesson.
You're welcome.
So, well, we have some time left. So let me say to you, how did COVID impact you as a teacher and your seventh grade students at Pine Hollow Middle School? Because they've always come to class and suddenly they're homebound, they're on the computers. How did that affect you as a teacher and they as students?
Well, it was a very lonely feeling, even to have a group of students in front of me on camera or off camera. In person, you get so much interaction. You can tell if something is working and helping students gain curiosity or if something is flopping. But online, it was so difficult. It was like I had to work up all these theatrics and then had no idea how I was coming across. It really taught me teaching is very much a two-way process. And because I was only giving and not getting a lot, it made it more challenging and way less fun. Being in the classroom, I think students and teachers feel so much more joy in being back in the classroom together, to see someone smile, at least in their eyes. When we were wearing masks, you could still see the smiles and jokes and interactions that just don't happen when it's a purely virtual environment.
Have they lost any ground in their learning experience and what they need to go on?
Yes, in really interesting ways. Some students didn't lose that much in terms of content knowledge, but I found that students have lost a lot of academic confidence. One of my teacher friends said it's like students became used to being confused or unsure how we all felt during COVID. And now, in general, I'm seeing a trend towards students being very tentative and hesitant to confidently answer a question or turn in an assignment. We've also had to work a lot on social intelligence and how to be in a room together as a community of learners. And on top of that, many students did miss learning goals, especially with reading and math. And I'm not an ELA or English language arts or math teacher, but those teachers specifically have been very challenged to help students catch up with what they missed.
Okay. It's too bad. It's really, really, really shameful that it had to turn out that way. So tell me now, how do you grade the use of Google in today's society?
That was a great question. And as a social studies teacher, I have come to terms with Googling, and I often encourage my students to Google it, use Google to answer their questions, especially if I don't have time to, because I'm finding that the more kids Google, the more curious they get, and actually the more questions they have, because they can feed their own curiosity. And I've also found that there's a lot of critical thinking involved in selecting the right search terms to get to get useful results when you're Googling. But I do, as a teacher, make sure that I ask un-Googleable questions, because Google, even though it has value, does encourage kids not to think sometimes. So I try to ask questions like that require analysis or synthesis, like to what extent are Putin's ambitions in Eastern Europe today similar to the ambitions of the British Empire in the age of imperialism? You can't really Google that. You could Google the British Empire or Putin or Ukraine, but you can't put them together. You have to rely on your own brain to do that.
Well, we give you an A for doing that. We don't have much time left, maybe 2 minutes. So I just want to comment that your passion for teaching shines. I want to know, yes or no, do you feel respected for the work you do? And if you have a 1 minute story about one student that you helped, you're on.
Okay. I do feel respected, and I love teaching, and I just want to do a shout out to say, if anyone is considering teaching as a career, please do consider it. It's hard work and needs the best and the brightest, and it's fun and energetic, and it's always interesting. I had a student, TJ, who at Sanderson was barely awake and couldn't sit through any classes. But I tried. I noticed he was a deep thinker, and I really tried to ask him lots of questions and not care so much about his grades. Well, wouldn't you know, but he started to answer some little questions just every day. And over the course of the year, he started staying awake more, doing assignments, and realized he loved learning. And that meant by the end of high school, he was passing his classes, passing high school, and went on to college.
We've run out of time for this month's episode of Community Connections. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. I'm Sonia Usech-Kuhn for the North Carolina Reading Service. Community Connections is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.com. If you have any comments, questions, or would like to be a sponsor of Community Connections, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.